Welcome to episode 42 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week, we give you the tools to indoctrinate everyone you know as we discuss our favorite episodes for a Whovian starter pack. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovian name.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 42 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we have the perfect prescription for anyone who demonstrates such symptoms as asking, what's the deal with the blue phone booth, showing confusion at simple offer of a jelly baby, or missing the hilarity in calling someone with excessive plastic surgery as Lady Cassandra. This week we are going to get down into it and give you our picks for our starter packs. These are the episodes we think are great to draw people into to Doctor Who, get them hooked, get them addicted, and you know, no hope of rehab. So this is Jay.
Use my new term. Indoctrinate them. Indoctrinate.
I am Jay, and as you can tell, with me this week are Keir. How's it going, Keir?
Howdy.
And Melissa, how are you doing, ma'am?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, we've got the stuff coming up, the 50th anniversary, a new doctor, all of these things that make it great, a great time to draw new people in, good jumping on points kind of thing.
And with 4 months gap, if you do get them hooked on the show, they can plow through a lot of content before the 50th comes around.
They can get caught up.
Yeah, we only have 165 days.
Is that all?
Yeah, well, you know, 165 days, 22 hours, 8 minutes, and 37 seconds to the British broadcast. But hey,
who's counting? Yeah, so.
Because Australia gets it first.
Do they?
Yeah. Australia and New Zealand, I believe, are going to be getting it first. But yes, the premise being the idea of if you were to sit down, and we wanted to keep this kind of like within very rigid confines. This wasn't just a matter of, you know, what are your favorite episodes or what are the episodes that you could sit someone down in front of and just say, here, watch this. It's the most awesome thing ever. And just try to impress them with the magnitude of certain episodes or certain scripts. But the idea here is to take somebody who, you know, they wander through your house. They're noticing all the whoabilia all around the place, as we know we all have. And they say, all right, well, what's the deal with it? So you're taking someone completely uninitiated, and you're trying to get them to enjoy the show without having too many questions come up, because you might lose them. So
yeah. So I mean, there's obviously the show has a lot of history and a lot of content. So you know, where do you start out? How do you get them the basic information? How do you get them up and running without, you know, it's like, here's seven series, watch them all, you know, because obviously, you know, every Whovian's, you know, way of getting someone to watch the show is, okay, you're going to start with an unearthly child, and once you get to the name of the doctor, you can stop. You
know? Yeah.
But, you know, clearly that's
better part of a year and a half. Go.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So, you know, we're trying to pare it down here, so I think that one of the great episodes to start off with, and I mean, how do you guys want to do this? You want to do like round robin or?
Yeah, we could each kind of pitch one in, because there's a little bit of overlap I'm noticing in all of our lists, but actually not as much as I thought there would be.
My list is longer than I expected it to be, and that was because I wanted to avoid overlap, but I see from your list, like, yes, that was what I was going to put in there. Yes, that was what, like, so I expect a lot of like enthusiastic agreement from me.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
well, Jay, this is your baby. Why don't you go first?
All right. So the one that I picked, and honestly, up until recently, my first pick had always been Rose, because they did a fantastic job in 2005 bringing this show back and making it accessible for people who had never seen it before. If you sit down and watch Rose, it's a great condensed information packet. The problem is it's not a good episode. You know, it's somebody that's going to sit down and watch that, they're going to be like, this is really hokey and campy, and I don't know if I want to invest time in this. So it's not the greatest time. So I jumped forward, and the 11th hour kind of has all that information as well. You know, you have a new companion who needs the doctor explained to them, who needs the TARDIS explained to them, that kind of thing. So you've got the information coming, but it's also a fantastic story and tremendous acting from both Matt Smith and Karen Gillan. You know, so it's a much better episode, and it still gets you the information that you want to, you know, kind of sum up who the Doctor is and what the show is about.
Right. That's a fine line to walk. You know, the transition episodes are always going to be the ones that are going to help us out a little bit, because as characters are getting things explained to them, the audience is getting it as well. So that's a nice kind of vehicle for us. But it is very tricky to get one of those that is still, that doesn't feel like a textbook kind of walkthrough without having much of a story to it.
Yeah. I mean, because I was looking at all the Tenet episodes where you got new companions and stuff, and you had, you know, Smith and Jones, you had Runaway Bride, but all of those kind of feed on what had come before. You know, in Runaway Bride, you've got the Doctor all melancholy over the fact that he lost Rose. Well, who's Rose? Why is he so upset? You know, the 11th hour was a fresh start completely. You didn't have any of the baggage carry over, which it's a double-edged sword in some aspects, but you didn't have to worry about the stuff that came before. You can start with this episode and feel like you're getting on at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually, that was one of the things that I don't like about this episode, that I feel like it was so separate from the, you know, what came before it. But when you put it that way, this is a perfect intro to the show for people, especially because we're in the 11th Doctor, and this is, you know, his, what he's going to be all about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was first?
And also, Caitlin Blackwood, I have to say, also, you said great acting from Karen Gillan, but the young Amy Pond was also amazing.
Oh, yeah. She really was. Yeah.
It's very difficult to find a child actor that can, you know, hold their weight, especially with a show that's so beloved and so criticized most of the time. To find one that can not only hold their own, but actually be memorable and enjoyable is an accomplishment.
Yeah,
and she's almost taller than me. I met her at Comic-Con and took that one picture, and people who see her are like, wait, were you, like, bending down? I'm like, I was slightly bending down, but not really. Like, that little girl's tall. So so is Karen Gillan, though, you know.
I'd say she has. Okay, so let's see, your first choice of episode.
My first choice was The End of the World, which was a Ninth Doctor episode. So, Jay, you said, you know, you were going back and forth with Rose as an episode, and I love Rose, and that was my very first Doctor Who episode. But what I think I would show to a friend of mine who had never seen the show would be The End of the World, which was the second episode of Series 1, the revived Doctor Who. And the reason for that is, it just really sets up everything that we're seeing. So, you know, he's a time traveler, and we saw in Rose that he's been at the Titanic and all this stuff in the past. End of the World goes right to the future, which for me was kind of a scary thing. Like, this was actually one of my first intros to sci-fi, and now I'm like a complete sci-fi geek. So I have to think that it had something to do with this episode or this series somehow. So, you know, it goes to the death of the sun, which is going to be the end of Earth as it is, but the Earth that was, and but humans have since then colonized the cosmos, and this episode just really plays around with that. And it, you know, we get the Doctor and Rose's relationship, which is great. We get some really profound things. We see, like, you know, there's already death, like the tree women that the Doctor is flirting with, like, you know, that chick dies horribly, spoiler alert from 2005.
And damn it,
yeah, but this is, you know, but that's a good intro to, you know, you're going to see people die in this series, and you're going to see really big questions asked, and you're going to see really big things pondered, like the freaking sun death. Like, you know, when the sun goes supernova, what is going to become of the Earth? Well, you know, we have this here, and of course it's just so profound because they actually miss the end of the world. They're so busy with other things, and then Rose has to sit there and say, we missed it, which... It, you know, it goes right to her character. Okay, so we saw Rose in this, you know, in episode one. Now we're seeing her again, and what is she all about? So I think if someone was going to pick up the series and especially try to understand people, like fans' obsession with Rose, this is a good starting place.
That's valid. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's also, it's nice to have, at least if this is one of the earliest ones that they sit down to, I think, as opposed to giving them Rose where Ninth is still not quite in his groove, this is actually a little bit friendlier episode or more approachable episode for Ninth. You know, he's got a little bit of a spark to him, a little bit of humor to him through it. You know,
a little bit of flirtiness that never shows up again.
Yeah, but it's just it's probably a little safer that way, just so they're not getting somebody who they can't really understand why it is that he's got all these kind of undertones that he does. And again, I want to try to expose people to episodes that aren't going to raise a ton of questions right off the bat. Because too many questions, and they're just going to sign off and say, you know, I can't make any sense of this damn thing.
Yeah. So. All right. So what was your first
pick? My lungs.
So intimate.
I went way back. I figured... I haven't really determined presentation order on these, but I think if you were really going to try to – knowing your audience, knowing who it was you were sitting down in front of this, and if they were any sort of a fan of any other sort of sci-fi, especially some stuff that's been around for a little while, I chose City of Death for Tom Baker and Forth. It's a brilliantly written dialogue episode. It's clever and sharp, and it's, you know, it's like a tennis match between not only our primary characters but even some of our secondary characters. You know, our brainless thugs and whatnot get dragged into, you know, these great little wars of words and things, and Baker just shines in one as being just straight up bug nuts but still getting the job done. And he's just enjoyable to see him, you know, eat up the scenery. I do like the fact that when they do involve anything that has to do with the Doctor's role or his past or his abilities or, you know, what's this funny little device he carries in his pocket and things, they're handled with a very light touch. You know, Sonic Screwdriver makes an appearance in this one, but it's only used after smacking it a couple of times to open a lock and a door. And that's it. You know, little stuff like that. So, you know, and even, you know, our companion, Romana, is actually, you know, clever and engaged and things, because she was one of the brighter Classic Who companions for obvious reasons and things. And having it set in, well, at the time, modern day, you know, 1979 Paris, gave people kind of a comfortable anchor. It wasn't like I was sticking them on a moon base or something. So they had a little bit of points of familiarity. Oh, okay, they're at the Louvre. Oh, okay, there's the Mona Lisa. Oh, okay, there's the Champs-Élysées, things like that. So it was a safety buffer, I guess you could say. I don't know. I go back to this one all the time. I use it for all
the time. Yeah, I have this on my list, too, as just kind of like a bonus outside of the five. And I was just talking about this with someone today, about how the way that the format of the episodes used to be, where – one story would take several, you know, half hour episodes to tell, and everything ended on a cliffhanger. I like, it gets annoying when I'm watching it on Netflix or something, like, let alone if I were there watching it in real time and having to wait a week for the next one, I'd be going crazy. A cliffhanger every single episode is just too much. And yet, this episode in particular, or, you know, this series of episodes, City of Death, I didn't feel that at all. I really wanted to get to the next one and see what was happening. It just has that feel to it.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great episode. I absolutely loved it when I sat down and watched it. The reason I didn't include any of the classic stuff in my list is simply because it's if I'm trying to draw someone into the show, it's kind of difficult to get them to accept. Part of it is knowing your audience, but for the most part, you know, saying, hey, sit down and watch this show that's completely outdated. It's got a good story, but the cinematography and the, you know, camera techniques and things like that aren't all that great. But it's really good. Trust me. Sit down and watch, you know, 4 episodes of it. And, yeah. So,
well, I think this one in particular, if you were going to grab some, this one actually is safer than most in that regard.
Oh, yeah,
you,
absolutely.
You don't really have a whole lot of bubble wrap monsters or things like that. Like, there's only one real point where they're trying to break through a stone wall that's clearly painted styrofoam chunks, and the guy kind of flings himself at it 4 or 5 times to bust through.
Yeah.
That's about the only moment where you go, you know, okay, a rough day for the prop department, huh? I get it. But, you know, since they did a lot of exterior shots and things too, which means they had to shoot onto film, you know, at the standard frame rates and stuff, it kind of takes some of that, look away from it, so it doesn't look like a, you know, a late 70s British soap opera or something.
Right. Yeah, no, this is definitely one of the better ones. It definitely shines in comparison with a lot of episodes, but yeah, I tried to steer away from the classic stuff, but this is definitely a great one, and as soon as somebody shows the slightest bit of interest, I'd be like, okay, good, now watch some of the classic stuff. Yeah. Start with this one.
Yeah. All right, so Jay, back to you for your next installment.
The next one, and again, this is the order can vary plenty, but my next one that I picked was Girl in the Fireplace. Yeah, this was the Tenet episode with Renette, with Madame de Pompadour. I think this is a good episode just to give them the gist of the show. You know, you've got them on a spaceship far in the future, jumping back to, you know, Renaissance France. Yeah, all this time travel that's going on, a lot of sci-fi stuff, some hilarious humor in it. You know, you get to see how the Doctor interacts with historical figures and historical situations, multiple companions. You know, it's just a good all-inclusive, like, this is what the show is. Like, this is how it feels kind of episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I was saying about the end of the world, going to the future was kind of a cool thing for me. Like, it brought me into something new. This episode for me felt like home. Like, Madame de Pompadour, I've said this before, is one of my historical, not idols because I don't admire her necessarily in that way, but someone that I've always really been really fascinated by. And I just love this time period and stuff. And so to see him go to the past and interact in that way was just amazing. And I love when someone, like, when she just gets it, when he, you know, before he even does the whole head bonk thing and now you understand everything in my head like he does to Craig a couple seasons later, it's just, she gets it. Like, I love that. Like, they don't talk down to their audience. They're like, okay, this is someone, like, she figured it out. Like, she's the stand-in for us. Like, I bet you guys can get this.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely valid. And again, it's that idea of, okay, if you are going to start to show people that this show is going to involve a bit of time travel, and you're going to go in the future, so you're going to take them out of any sort of comfort zone, you're still tethered to something they can understand. Oh, okay, I got it. Victorian France. Gotcha. All right.
It's not Victorian or Renaissance, guys. It's like 18th century. So
whatever.
All right. You know.
It's France. It doesn't matter.
Anti-Poopadoo costumes.
We can all agree with that. It's France. It doesn't matter.
Lady Poopadoo.
But yeah, and I also like... just the way that Mickey is in this episode as well, like, because you start to think, is there, like, a romantic thing? Well, Mickey. Yeah, but like you there's the whole, like, question of, like, romance between the Doctor and Rose, but like having Mickey there kind of anchors it. Like, no, we're not going there just yet, you know.
Yeah, true. Even though that poor kid, I swear.
Poor Mickey.
You hate him for a little while, and then you realize, wow, he's really just getting his heart handed to him over and over and over. It's like that dog on the doorstep in the rain.
That's part of the reason why I like this episode, is because Noel Clark is tremendously awesome in and of his own right, but he plays such an idiot character, and he does it so well. Mm-hmm. You know, and then once you see him grow as a character, you can go back and appreciate these episodes, be like, wow, yeah, he was a complete idiot. But
Well, we went through a very similar dance with Rory. So
true.
Yeah, good
just
point.
To go. The extreme.
Yeah, we didn't get to to Auton Mickey. He just decided to go.
We did get to Auton Mickey in Rose.
Very first, yeah.
Well, Well, but I'm saying that our eventual outcome with Mickey is that we, you know, he went totally badass and got a different companion. Even
he's
better.
The reverse Rory.
Exactly. So, Melissa, what'd you have for your next one?
All right, so I really cheated on my list, so I apologize.
Yeah, you're doubling up all these.
I'm going to double up a lot. but these are conjoined episodes. So my next is The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, which is another Ninth Doctor story arc. And I just love these because it's good from just a general show point of view because you're introducing Captain Jack Harkness, hello, major, major player in the show. And it's more of the Doctor-Rose interaction. The Doctor dances and is in reference to the fact that he dances with her at the end. But just on like a purely surface, enjoying the episode level, aside from Blink, this might be the first thing that I would like, when people get into Doctor Who, I always make them watch Blink. But which is not on my list, so I'll leave that to someone else to talk about. But this is my other thing of like, hey, like if you want to check out something cool, watch The Empty Child, because it will. When I first watched this, I was alone in the dark. It was me and my dog, like cowering under the covers, like
it's to hide behind the couch.
Exactly, and the term "hide behind the couch" comes from Doctor Who. Like this is a perfect example of like the classic scary episode. Yeah. Love it.
Definitely had the creep factor. You mentioned having Jack appear in here. It's also something where it's a decent way of just sort of touching on that overlapping circle about there are other people involved with this time travel and time protection / manipulation as well, you know, and having the time agents and those things, because it starts to broach that subject. Doesn't go too far with it because Jack doesn't have time to explain anything in any great detail. He's busy looking for the next shag, but just the idea of saying, okay, well, we've got this Time Lord guy and he's kind of taking this on as this one man crusade. Oh wait, there's this other group that are bopping around time and space too for different reasons. Okay. So there's gotta be some sort of overlap in this show. Okay. I get it. And it gives him just enough explanation to say, okay, processed, back pocket, ready to move on to the next thing.
Yeah. See, the only reason I wouldn't include this as a starter episode, and I'm not arguing with the fact that you can't. I'm just saying my personal, I'm devil's advocating it here.
Yeah.
This has such a great storyline for the Doctor, just in realizing that this is the first time he's been able to resolve everything with everyone staying alive. And just his character development through this story, I feel like is such a great thing that if you watch it without watching everything that comes before it, you kind of cheat yourself. Because it's such a great moment seeing him at the end, when he's, so excited saying everybody lives. And if you don't understand why he's so excited about that, you're missing a lot from that scene.
I don't know. I'll put your devil's advocate right back at you, though. I think in one of those cases, that's actually beneficial, because it's one of those things where, well, what did he mean by that? Because remember, in terms of order of release, this was one of the earlier episodes.
Yeah.
So this is something where the new audience catching this in 2005, 2006 didn't know what he's talking about either.
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, let's take this meta level.
Three-sided dice.
It's really dark when you think about it in retrospect, because he says just this once everyone lives. So if you're thinking of, whatever came before it, oh, okay, great. Like now we have this great new thing where everyone lives. And yet if you look at subsequent episodes, not everyone lives. So it seems like this is ushering in kind of like, oh, the Doctor's going to make everything great. And, in my opinion, 11th Doctor just does that. Everyone lives every time. Like there's no conflict, no stakes at all. But that's a discussion for a different day. But in this, it was like just this one time. And for a few episodes after that, you kind of see that like, oh, like, people die,
Serious stuff going down. But yeah, no, I can see both sides of it. I think that that's kind of what makes it compelling to a new viewer. If they at this point, you know, if they've seen a couple, maybe just a couple, and then you show them this one, so they've got, you know, serious creepiness with the kid in the mask and so forth, and then you get your explanation, and you've got Jack running around, you've got, you know, all those great sort of comedic elements as well, bit of adventure, bit of scare, bit of humor. And then all of a sudden it ends in this kind of this question mark. Like, whoa, okay, that statement was a little, you know, it was said with like happiness, but if you take it out of the way he said it and what he said, okay, and your brain wants to kind of play with that a little bit. If your new viewer is paying attention and catches that, I think that that's a good hook. That's just me.
Yeah. On a side note, my my 5-year-old the other day put on one of his little dress up mask things that he's had.
Oh god!
And it had nothing to do with the gas mask. He just decided to walk up to me. Are you my mummy? I just looked him dead in the face. I was like, not cool. Do not.
Too soon, dude.
Oh, he started cackling and ran off, and I was just like, oh, not cool. Anyway. So, Kira, on to your next choice.
Your kid sounds awesome, by the way.
Raising him right. I've got one here that's sort of – I'm going to hang an asterisk on this because this is kind of a tetchy inclusion. I wanted to make sure that we had a little bit of additional classic Who representation, and I wanted to go for Caves of Androzani and using Fifth. Primarily because I think it does, at its essence, it does a decent job of seeing the doctor in Davison's form go through a lot of different approaches to handle adversaries on all sides. You know, everybody other than his companion that he interacts with in this episode is out to get one another. Nobody's hands are clean. It's like this, you know, two warring sides on this great, you know, humanity versus cyborg kind of battle thing. And yet there's these gunrunners in between that are just as disreputable as either side in the battle. So everybody sucks. And Dr. and Perry stuck in the middle of this thing just because they wanted to go see what was in a cave, get dragged through this whole thing. And we end up with a regeneration. So in this particular instance, just because of the fact that it's, I think the way they handled all of the lead up to the regeneration, which happens just like as it very often does, right in the final seconds, it has a decent amount of explanation. You know, the doctor spends out of the 4 episodes, like at least an episode and a half of partial episodes, you know, 1.5 to 2 of these partial episodes dying, you know. They've all been exposed to this terminal, chemical exposure and whatnot, and he ends up with being given the opportunity to explain it along the way, the fact that he is sacrificing himself for his companion. And if you didn't really understand or grasp the whole doctor-companion relationship before that, or if you had no idea that there was going to be this idea of regeneration involved, things like that, this was a kind of an easing in to that without making it so overt that your viewers going to sit there going, I don't follow. Why are they doing this? Why is he not afraid to die too? I don't get this. So
yeah,
it's just a little risky because of the fact that the pace is not, you know, if you were trying to handle this chronologically and you just showed them City of Death with Baker just firing on all pistons, and then you hand this episode over, it feels like it's running at about half speed until you get towards the end. It's tougher to view that way. It goes back to one of your original points, Jay, about why you didn't really want to tap into a lot of classic Who. This does have some bad acting, some poor pacing, and a really crappy monster. I mean, that Cave Wolf armadillo thing that just, you know, sits there and looks like a reject from a Mothra movie. Just bad.
I think of it as an R-O-U-S, rodent of unusual size.
With a cape. Some sort of a cape.
Like a humanoid R-O-U-S.
Yeah. I always enjoyed it because I was like Davidson. I think he brought interesting aspects to the doctor all along. He was just kind of he was very, very likable, clever, humorous and good-natured, but he, unlike Baker, instead of going wild, would actually tap into more of the Third Doctor scientific reasoning and that sort of aspect. So it was a nice little touchback to that, just to remind you that, you know, he's amassing a lot of knowledge as a result of all of his time and travel. So that's a nice little piece. But man, Perry is a rough companion to watch.
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna go with some of the 80s episodes, this is one of the best ones, simply because they were trying to go with the more updated shooting style, with the single camera with quick action shots and, you know, quick cuts and things like that, as opposed to the, you know, four camera setup and the long shots that they had been using since the 60s. It's I can't remember the director who did this one, but he came in and wanted to have a more modern look to it, and you can really tell if you compare it to some of the episodes that surround it. You know, this had a much better look to it than the rest of them, you know, 80s special effects and stuff notwithstanding. Right. Yeah, the cinematography in it was much better, and the storytelling, you know, was greatly boosted because of that. So yeah, if you're going to include some of the 80s episodes, this is definitely a good one. But yeah, it can be a bit rough. You really have to know your audience if you're going to recommend this one.
Yeah. Graham Harper was actually the director on this one. One of the interesting
Who it was.
I did a little looking into it, and because you do notice, if you're trying to watch this chronologically, you do notice the camera shifts and the fact the editing is far more familiar, I would say, to what we as a modern viewing audience would expect to see. But on a technical aspect, he was also one of the first ones to put the majority, including himself at times, of the production crew down on the soundstage floor rather than from up in a control booth, so that he could call out notes and directions and corrections on the fly, sometimes during takes, and they'd mask out audio. So it allowed the actors to be able to respond really quickly and naturally, sometimes within takes. So it was you got a little bit more. You could definitely see that you're getting more out of your more polished actors. I mean, you've got also as far as up one of your baddies as Morgus, he gets a chance to actually like break into monologues and things. So from like an actor's standpoint, this was an interesting episode for them to be able to kind of play around with. It just kind of gets overshadowed by the fact that there's some really crappy extras involved.
Yeah, I think I actually touched on some of those things when we talked about this episode, right? Like, I feel so bad about this because I really love this episode, but anything that ever comes out of my mouth about it is terrible. So that's all I have to say about it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Back to you, sir.
All right. The next one I included was actually Dalek, which was a Ninth Doctor episode. This is very early on in the series. I think this is the fourth or fifth episode. But this is great at, you know, reestablishing the Daleks, showing them who the Daleks are, why they're important, and, you know, giving the history between of the Doctor and the Daleks, and, you know, explaining the Time War, explaining why he's the last of the Time Lords, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of good information out of this one, and being able to see, you know, Rose kind of, she's still new to it all, and she questions him on things that, you know, have been accepted for, you know, hundreds of years in his lifetime. He's just like, this is how it is. It's hundreds of years of routine ground into him, and it takes one little blonde girl to say, but why?
Right.
And you see everything start to break down. He's like, I haven't asked myself that question in so long that I don't even remember now. Mm-hmm. And you can see her start to change him in that aspect. You know, the one scene that I always remember is when the Doctor comes out and he's getting ready to shoot the Dalek, and he tells Rose to get out of the way. And she's like, no, I'm not going to let you do this. And, you know, he's like, it's a monster. It's going to kill you. And he's like, and she looks at him and says, well, he's not the one pointing a gun at me. And in that scene, I've got to say, Eccleston just completely won me over, because the look on his face, the sheer, you know, defeat in his face as he drops the gun was just like, she just shook him to the core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was like the one phrase she could say that would, you know, ruin everything in his life. And it was such a great and powerful scene that, you know, I love it. And I mean, it kind of shows you how important the companions are for the Doctor. That this shows why you've got to have the companion there.
Right. Yeah, I like that you said that, that this shows what how the companions are for the Doctor. Because for me, this, you know, this is not the best episode. And this was actually, I started with Rose. Like, I had never seen or really even heard much about Doctor Who until then. So this was my first intro to the Daleks at all. And I just didn't get it. Like, I didn't think this was one of the best episodes. And I didn't, it, you know, I mean, upon first viewing, like, I didn't think it was one of the best episodes, but there was something about it that really bugged me and stuck with me. And I think that was it. Like, you know, that, Rose was, you know, she sees the humanity, I don't know what the word would be, like, in the Dalek, and brings that out in the Doctor. So, yeah, you're right. Like, I would never, ever have chosen this as my intro to what people should watch. But now that you put it that way, I actually, I agree. Yeah. Mm.
It also does a fair job of making the audience, a newer viewing audience, aware of the fact that, you know, in all of the, if they're starting to grasp the idea that he's been around for a long time, he's, you know, he's had all these experiences, he's been all these places, he's faced all these foes along the way, there are some that recur and some that bear some significance or that, are not yet gone. So there's backstory that we continue to get new installments of, which any sci-fi viewer kind of latches onto because they say, oh, okay, our recurring theme. Yeah, all right, I get that. I like that idea. So this does that kind of carefully because, as you said, it's an earlier episode, so they're doing a bit of exposition for Rose's sake, but they're really doing it for the audience's sake, and it still remains, you know, compelling. I always, even from first viewing, was always really I love the fact that this is one of the points, one of the episodes where they really drive the point home of, you know, last of your kind, what that really represents and the impact that that has on, you know, on the Daleks, on Cybermen, on our Doctor, on, you know, anyone who falls into that, that position and what that really means. So that's a pretty heady subject, but it's one that an audience member can say, oh, okay. That, yeah. All right. I understand.
Right. And again, like we never, I, as someone who came into it with New Who, I never knew that. Like, I didn't understand that until, like, I didn't see the classic episodes where he was a Gallifreyan and to know what that means and know what the other people were like and to know what it means to be a Time Lord. And so this episode was literally my first introduction to this idea that he was the first of his the last of his kind.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, you know, the ramifications are crazy.
Right, but it doesn't spend so long on it. It doesn't go into flashbacks or anything like that that are just going to overcomplicate it. It just kind of throws a couple lines out there. You know, he very quickly kind of rattles off, you know, the significance of what's going on here to try, because they're in the middle of a crisis situation. And it's just enough to be able to, you know, answer the questions, address the fact that, you know, it means danger. We've got some work to do. And you move on from there. So doesn't give him time to sit there and pick it apart. But no, but why? Why were they fighting in the Time War? How long ago was the Time War? Why did they call it the Time War? No, busy now. Daleks are floating up a staircase. Can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. All right. So, Melissa, what's your next one?
Okay. So my next one is, again, I'm cheating, Human Nature and Family of Blood. Which is the 10th Doctor story arc, two episodes. And I started thinking about this when we said last week of what our you know, what our starter pack episodes would be. And I really wanted to include this. And then I said, no, it's too dark. It's too different. It's too weird. It's not, it doesn't quite keep in with the same pace as the rest of the season, the rest of the show in general. And then I came back to it and said, yes, like, absolutely. There was a thread on Reddit of what are, like, the worst deaths in Doctor Who. And a lot of people said this about Family of Blood and what happens to the family at the end. And it's, for the, you know, and for that reason, I brought it back. It was originally on my list, and then, you know, I crossed it off and brought it back. Because I think that this goes back to the nature of the Doctor. And I was having a conversation with someone today, and his favorite Doctor is Colin Baker. And he was saying, I like the Doctor because he's a dark character, and David Tennant is my least favorite character because he was too bright and upbeat, and he made this like superhero kind of character, and I don't like that. And I said, you know, what about Family of Blood, like what he does to them? And he, you know, had no answer to that. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, like, I'm glad I kept that on my list. Like, because this is, it's showing the dark side of the Doctor, but not really. It's also showing his human side, his,
literally.
Okay, so, you know, for those who don't know, the Doctor becomes human in this episode. And poor Martha has to take care of his sorry ass for these few episodes, and like I feel so bad for her in these, but I think it's just so good as a way of showing the Doctor's personality. And he has that great quote, which I don't have in front of me, so I'm gonna screw it up, but how he says, like, talking about him as John Smith, his human alter ego, talking about the Doctor, and he says, like, he never even considered that he could fall in love. Well, then what kind of person is that? And it's like, he falls in love briefly for one episode, for, you know, or two episodes with this one matronly woman from like 1901, like, who, you know, has nothing to do with anything. And yet it's so real to him. And to me, that's this show. That's the nature of the beast, that he has this side to him that's just so real and so compassionate for people. And yet at the same time, he has this side to him that is, you screw with the people that I love and, you know, no mercy will be shown to you. And he does that, and he does it in a very fair way. And, you know, you get your aliens invading, and you get your time travel, and you get your doctor companion dynamic and stuff. And I just think that these two episodes, for someone who's not too familiar with the series, this is what it's about. Definitely.
I love this episode because it shows how awesome the Doctor can be. Like, it does show his dark side. It shows that, I mean, the speech at the end when, you know, they explain how he dealt with the family and everything he did. And then, you know, I think it was Son of Mine that was narrating it, said, you know, we wanted to live forever. And, or, you know, what was it he was saying? He said something like, you know, I finally realized why he was running from us. He was being kind, you know. And at that moment, you're like, "Holy crap, that is awesome!"
Just saying that now gave me chills.
Yeah. So I mean, it kind of shows, like, you know, the Doctor really is like the British version of Batman. He's just awesome. That's all there is to it. There's no explanation needed.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that might keep me from keeping this on an early exposure list is simply the complexity level of some of the very Whovian aspects that get incorporated. There's a lot of hand waving. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a fair amount of sort of tech and manipulation of mind and so forth that could be a bit much for an early viewer to be able to take on without wanting to pause every 6 minutes, turn to one of us and say, okay, what?
Well, I want to play devil's advocate again. And I think that's what they need, because there's so much hand waving and the deus ex machina, something coming in to swoop in from left field to save people. What a mixed metaphor, but whatever. Like,
you're drifting into my territory.
But yeah, like, I think if you're going to get a feel for the show, like, know that this kind of thing happens.
Okay. I'll accept it. Honestly, I think it'd be kind of confusing to take the personality away from the Doctor, who's they're still trying to figure out in the first place, and suddenly render him, you know, non-Time Lord. I think that might be a little bit of a throw. But because I was sort of seeing this as, you know, if I email somebody a list, here, watch these, and I'm not there to hold their hand and say, okay, if you really need anything, squeeze my hand, I'll pause.
Yeah,
but that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's got its points that are great to show them, but yeah, this is definitely one of those that, you know your audience. If they're prepared for this kind of thing, then it's fine. But yeah, you've got a lot of these, you really just have to understand what you're showing your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely. So a lot of these are know your audience.
Yeah. And that kind of segues a little bit, because I had some overlaps with both of you. You know, I had Dalek on my list for reasons, you know, we've gone through, and I had The Empty Child on my list as well. When I was mentioning earlier that that Caves of Androzani might be a little too jarring or unusually paced or what have you for your audience member, you know your audience. If I were going to swap it out, I would probably, and this is not chronological, this is where my chronological order sort of falls apart a little bit, but I was considering Planet of the Ood, because that giving us an opportunity to see a lot of the compassion from both Doctor and Companion and how that comes about. It's a great Donna episode, and, you know, and just being able to see a Companion that really has some serious chops in being able to sort of take apart some of the, you know, the Doctor's bravado at times and so forth. The Ood are just these fascinating kind of characters to be able to play with that you don't need any backstory on, because they get explained in thorough detail over the course of the episode. But it ends on a very touching note too. And it even seeds things, you know, that we can then, you know, it, again, you know, if your viewer asks questions, why did those funny little tentacly faced things just refer to the Companion as Dr. Donna that one time? Oh, okay, you're gonna get that later. You know, this is foreshadowing. Yeah. So go ahead and just file that one away. If you really want to find out more, I've got plenty of episodes for you. So it's something that kind of, you know, whets their appetite on it. But that would have been my replacement if Fifth Doctor was a bit much or not enough for your audience member. So that covers my overlaps with you guys.
Okay. All right. Well,
now I get to fight with you two.
Okay. All right, so yeah, Melissa and I both have these on our list. We've got Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead.
Oh, my God. You're going to break their brains.
Exactly. I mean, I'm saying this is one that needs to get included later in the you know, 5 or 6 pack. Definitely get them a basis, get them started on it, and then say, okay, are you ready for some crap? You know, then set them down in front of these, because that it is. It's going to make them go, what the frack was that? You know, and that's what's going to sink the hook. You know, that's what's going to make them say, okay, I want to know more about this. What the hell is going on? You know, it's, you've got, you know, the Vashta Narada, which are incredibly creepy. They're going to sit there and start staring at shadows in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got River Song, the introduction of River Song, who then dies. So they're going to be like, how the hell are they going to, what the, you know, you've got the Companion being ripped away at the end of the first episode. And yeah, then the Doctor seeking to save her and her whole ordeal through all of that. I mean, there's just so much in this episode. It is so jam packed. They're great episodes. And it's not that my last two picks were both not for information's sake. Like, these aren't things that are going to teach them anything about the show. These are episodes that are going to grab them and say, you want to watch this stuff. These are the ones that are going to, you know, that are going to form the addiction.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, these were on my list, and if we're talking real world, actual, like, what I've actually shown people, so my boyfriend is not into Doctor Who, but for a little while, I got him watching the episodes with me, and it went blank, Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead, and that was what I showed to Hook, and then continue going. And I think that is a perfect, it's not about the show in general, but about the Moffat era, and it's a great lead-in into what's to come. Would you guys agree? Yeah.
Oh yeah, without question.
So, and I think, I personally, like, I like my shows to have some kind of intellectual component. Like, it, I mean, there are plenty of escapist things or whatever, but I watch this for some kind of engaging with the mind. I know to a certain degree it's like a children's show, whatever, but, like, I do,
no,
like,
it is think not. About it.
To a degree, I said. But this is one of the story arcs that really cements that, where it's, you really think about it for, like, you know, who could this River Song woman be? And like, why do I feel so much for her, even though I don't know who the hell she is? And then, you know, flash forward 2 years and you're like, I know River Song. I know why I felt that way. But they managed to create that feeling like so far in advance, you know, it's smart. I like these episodes because they're smart.
Okay. Jay, want to bolster that up a little more?
I mean, that's pretty much what it is. Is it's just the fact that, you know, it's such a fantastic episode that you can't help but be intrigued by it. I mean, that's my whole basis for including it.
Okay. Yeah. So, I guess the only thing that gives me pause is just because of the fact that it does. You know, I'm trying to weigh the scales in terms of interest them, intrigue them, but don't confuse them. And I don't know if, I mean, what was the success, Melissa? You said your boyfriend doesn't continue to watch Who, even though you used this power trio of episodes as your starter set. Something didn't take.
Oh yeah, no, he started watching the last couple episodes of the last season and gave up. I'm trying to tell him to come back to watch The Name of the Doctor and embrace it all again. But
it's going
to
confuse the crap out of him. All right. I don't know. This is one where I think you would gain so much more out of it if you were on stronger footing first. If you were, you know, a season in, or, you know, a half a dozen or a dozen episodes in, and you really were starting to get a little bit of a comfort factor. Because it demands, in my mind, so much of an understanding of the trials and the torments that the Doctor is subjected to, not only in terms of companions gained and lost, but then this whole confusion about, you know, what River represents and those things. And it just, if you have a better understanding of what the whole backdrop is, or what the universe really implies, or who our primary characters are, then I think the episode has infinitely more gravity and interest to it. I none of us are at the advantage of being able to actually say, oh, this is one of the first episodes I saw.
Yeah.
Right.
So it may be a very different experience to the uninitiated or underinitiated.
But you could really argue that for any episode, really. I mean, any episode that you're going to put in here, aside from, you know, Rose, which even then you would benefit from some classic knowledge, you know, you're going to have that where you can get more out of it if you've seen previous episodes. You know, but I don't think that this is one that requires that. You know, it's one that greatly gets from it. You get a lot more out of it if you have seen more. But I think that's kind of why I like to use it as a starter episode, is because it you do get so much more out of it that people who haven't seen anything else watch this and say, I'm missing something. There's more to this, and it kind of gives them that desire to see it. You know, you
right,
want...
and they don't even know that feeling of I'm missing something comes from even the most seasoned viewer.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those, again, you've got to know your audience. You know, these really work well if you've shown them a couple episodes, and if they're kind of on the fence, they're like, yeah, that was interesting, but I'm not sure if it's something I'm going to stick with. You yank the rod with this episode and set the hook, and then they're done. You know, but if you've got someone who, you know, they suffered through two episodes and they're like, yeah, this show's really not for me, I don't think this is really going to do anything for them.
Right. Yeah. This may be better served towards putting it down in front of somebody who has absorbed a lot of other sci-fi, especially anything having to do with, you know, plays around with time and space, because this may not be quite a bit of a throw when you have a character that is somehow on a reverse chronology and all of that entails. So I think that might put that person at an advantage. If you've got someone who's just really started breaking into, you know, a lot of sci-fi viewing, and they're coming from, oh, I don't know, fantasy or action adventure shows or film and things like that, and they may have a little difficulty wrapping their head around this because it's intentionally written so that you have a hard time wrapping your head around it, it runs as much risk as it does reward, in my estimation.
Well, you get the biggest reward from those kind of things, so Agreed.
True, true. I did go with you though, Melissa, in terms of your, you know, your attempt at your three pack. That I had to put Blink on here. I noticed that you two didn't. Although we keep using it, it's almost like the running gag. Well, okay, how you'd expose somebody to Doctor Who? We'll start with Blink and then go from there. Well, yeah. It's worth saying why. This I don't know necessarily that I would use this as the first because
Blink?
Of the fact.
Yeah. We're on Blink now? Okay.
Yeah. Because of the fact the Doctor is actually an ancillary character in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But from compelling factor, from sheer interesting script approach and the idea of the videotapes, you know, recorded knowing the other sides of the conversations and that whole sort of really kind of cool aspect of it, the sort of out of sync play with it that gives you the idea that, okay, well, when the Doctor is involved, he's doing some wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff and you get to sort of start to tap into that too. But it's just from start to finish, it's a roller coaster ride and it's wholly enjoyable and you don't have to understand squat about the Doctor to enjoy it. So
see, I like using Blink outside of outside of the starter pack. I like, you know, sitting there, they're like, what do you want to watch? You ever heard of Doctor Who? No, what's about? Here, watch this one. Yeah, I don't use this as a way to draw them into the show so much as a way to introduce them because I don't know. There's a point where there has to be enough interest to be able to sit down and watch a list of episodes. You know, if they know nothing about it, if you're just sitting there, you know, and you're like, hey, why don't you try one of these out? This is a good one to throw at them. That's not, it's not so Doctor centric and so, you know, wrapped up in the whole mythos that they can't understand it or they can't, you know, you don't have to explain anything to them. This is a great contained episode for just a quick one off. Hey, try this out. If you like it, then I can give you this list that you might be interested in. Right. You know, so I kind of separate that. That's the only reason I love this as an introductory episode for that reason, but that's the only reason why I didn't include it in my list is just because it feels like a separate entity to me.
Well, I 100% concur, but it would still be part of my list just because I'm dishonest. Just because I'd be like, watch this. Don't you love this show? Oh my God. Totally watch all these other episodes without telling you that they're not all like that. You know,
well, that's why I would want to keep it, you know, a little later in the set. It would have to be in the set as far as I'm concerned, but it would be one where I'm going to give them a little bit of an understanding so that they kind of know a couple of your principal characters, understand the significance of the fact of, you know, what the phone box is. All right, got that. And then I'm going to say, okay, in that little bit of understanding, that little bit of, you know, okay, I think I get it. There's a doctor, there's a person or people that ride around with him for a little while. This is the ship that allows him to do so. He's been around for a long time. He's got some adversaries that he faces once or twice, and there's other ones that keep kind of coming around like those pepper pots. Okay, got it. Then you hand him this, and it's something where it says, this is how the show is versatile. This is how it can go from something that's kind of fun and entertaining and kind of an adventure thrill ride, and this one goes into paranormal activity. I mean, this is just outright freaky, and it just kind of shows that or demonstrates that the show has that ability to spin in any direction as it wants to, because it has so many people involved with it who are so passionate about it that you know, when they say, okay, let's scare the crap out of them this week. Okay, got it. Next week we'll make them laugh, and the week after that we'll make them cry. But this week, no, hide behind the couch.
Yeah, that's a valid point. That's a valid point.
That is a really good point, actually, yeah.
So, now, you two had another agreement on an episode that falls into the, you know, I'm never going to tell anybody not to watch this episode. I just want to be really careful when I do show it to him, because this is going to generate as many questions as Silence of the Library, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, at this point, I was looking more at what episodes did I really enjoy? Which episodes do I think would be something that could create all those questions that are going to lead into more episodes? And The Doctor's Wife fits in perfectly. Yeah, it shows the relationship between the Doctor and the TARDIS brilliantly. You know, there's a lot of questions that come up that don't really need answers once you've watched the rest of the series. You know, there's, I mean, just the writing and the banter between the Doctor and the TARDIS are fantastic. Yeah, there's just so much to love in this episode that I can't see anyone sitting down and watching it and not being impressed by it. They may not watch it and say, okay, I'm going to watch every episode that has ever come out, but they're going to sit down and be like, okay, that was not a waste of my time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I would never use this as the first show, like, episode that I would show to someone. But as far as getting a feel for what the series is about and what the relationship of the Doctor and his companions and the TARDIS is, this is just spot on. Like, it was just so perfect. And it shocked me to learn, you know, months after this episode aired, that there are a lot of people that really don't like it. And we've talked about this before, like, because for me, like, I love this episode. Like, I you know, there are things that I admire on a certain level, but I don't actually enjoy. And this one was just like, you know, I really liked it and I really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, if you're bringing someone who's new to the series into it, that's a good sell, that they can just enjoy an episode and see, you know, you got your Amy and Rory storyline, you got your Doctor storyline, you know, everything's enjoyable. But I wouldn't introduce them to the show with this episode. It requires a lot of seeing the Doctor and the TARDIS and just seeing the TARDIS as the blue box, I think, in my opinion, before you get to there's an actual relationship there and this is what it is. So this is not one of my quote-unquote favorite episodes or something that I would show in, like, a, you know, a top 10. Maybe it'd be top 10. Probably not, but maybe. But, like, as far as, like, intro to the show and what it's all about, I think that this really goes a long way to showing the Doctor and the TARDIS's relationship.
Mm-hmm. You touched on a point that I think is one of the primary reasons why I would keep this off of an indoctrination list. This episode is within my top two, if not probably my favorite episode. Not Matt Smith notwithstanding, but just because of the fact that it requires, I think, in order to really, really get the sheer beauty of this episode on so many levels, you really need to have a firm ground of the length and breadth of the experiences, let alone the relationship between Doctor and TARDIS here. You know, his conversations, you know, screaming at the control panel or thanking her on the return from some, you know, near scrape kind of a thing, and just kind of knowing that, you know, as I've said on, you know, through, you know, hitched chest on so many episodes up to this point, or so many podcasts up to this point, that she is and always will be his ideal companion. So if you don't have a little bit, or even just the smallest bit of real core understanding of that relationship before she gets personified and we get all of this beautiful dialogue between them, I feel like you're cheating the viewer, your new viewer, because they're not going to get nearly as much out of this on that first exposure and that moment where it just punches you square in the chest with you know, my emotions and so forth, if they don't have that foundation first. So I would definitely keep that in my back pocket and be one of those ones where I'd either let them come to it naturally or wait until I feel like they've got a decent amount of understanding and grasp and they're kind of digging it and they're seeing how the TARDIS has come to his rescue on more than 1,000 occasions, and then throw this at him and hand him a box of tissue and leave the room.
Yeah, I can understand that. No, I'm not going to argue that. That's why it's so far down on my list. Is this is one that, you know, if they needed a little nudge over the edge, I think this could be it. And honestly, if you after you've seen this episode and you go back and watch more, the way he is when he's working the console or, you know, just talking about the TARDIS or anything like that seems so much more so much deeper once you've seen this episode and seen the relationship between the two of them that, you know, I almost feel like if you start off with that knowledge, you're going to have a much different experience than people that don't come to it until it's the, you know, the natural order of episodes. Mm. You know, the whole experience is going to be different because you see this from the beginning. This is, you know, there's no difference. There's no point when the TARDIS is just a ship. You know, so you're gonna look at episodes completely differently. So whether or not that's good or bad, I don't know. I haven't actually been able to field test this one yet, but yeah, I think that there's so much that you can get out of this episode that I feel like watching it early on could have, you know, it could shape the way that you watch the show.
That's true. I think that's probably one of the reasons why in my list I did include the last one that I threw on there. A lot of the same reasons, but it sort of dodges a bit of my concerns about needing to have that that footing first. But mm-hmm. still in terms of, you know, we've talked about episodes that play up the spookiness, or episodes that have to do with the idea of adventure, or episodes that have to do with the idea of really kind of playing around, having fun with time and going to the end of the world and that sort of thing. Well, if I'm going to use one that really says, okay, I showed you Blink because I wanted to scare the crap out of you. Now I'm going to show you one that's going to show you how to farther, you know, one of the farthest ends of the spectrum in the opposite way can actually really warm your heart. And so that would be Vincent the Doctor. Very encapsulated. Doesn't require a lot of understanding of the companions. So if they hadn't come across any Rory Amy episodes yet, they're okay. Because, you know, Amy is wholly entertaining in this one. You know, Rory is he's at that point where he's starting to break out of that puppy dog scripting that they had done for him. So he's not too ancillary.
Well, Rory doesn't exist in this episode, technically.
Technically, yes, that's true. So you don't have to have that confusion factor with it. But it's just, if for nothing else, you know, you've got the aspect of the. It gives a great representation of the Doctor as a compassionate protector.
Okay, we haven't even mentioned the name. We're talking about Vincent and the Doctor, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't think you said that yet.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Way to be on top of things, Melissa. Jeez.
Yeah, that's not my strong suit.
But, you know, it's like right at the moments where, you know, they're battling this monster throughout and trying to, you know, they're utilizing, you know, Vincent as best they can and all, you know, and they're going through all of his torments and things, which is great, you know, in terms of the historical touchstones to be able to use, you know, and the idea of having Vincent and all of his anguish and things is just an interesting dynamic to add into the episode to give it some realism, because anybody who knows, you know, any of Van Gogh's background knows how, you know, what a tormented soul he was and so forth, or, you know, questions of his sanity and so forth and those things. So it had that little bit of an anchor to hold on to. But even when you get to the point where, you know, he ends up having to, you know, he's fighting off the alien creature, not intending to kill it, he ends up accidentally inflicting a mortal wound to it, and in that process he finds out that, you know, the fact that this monster is, again, it's that last of your kind of a thing that we're dealing with again, and that idea of all of the weight that typically carries as far as a plot element. And you see that the trouble that puts the Doctor through, and the fact that he actually acknowledges mistakes and misjudgments and things, and that's kind of an interesting thing to start to expose a new viewer to. I don't know. And God, you take the last 5 minutes of this episode. If you can survive that and say, oh, that was a nice episode, you have no soul whatsoever. None.
Agreed.
So I would use this as the last of whatever order I put the rest of them in, because I want people to know that at the core of it, this series, while it travels all these exotic places and meets all these amazing things and goes through all of these adventures, and there's highs and lows and births and deaths and timelines, beginning and ending and so forth, but at the heart of it, at least what the show represents right now, or what it's trying to really forge for itself right now, and its gift to the viewers, is the fact that the show has a tremendous amount of heart.
Yeah.
And this exemplifies that to the nth degree. So yeah. I would use this as the wrap up and say, there, from that point on, if you want to stick with it, I'm going to send you back to series one, episode one. You know, occasionally we'll scatter some classic Who in there if they mention something that you want some backstory on, and we'll take a trip back. But
yeah,
now you've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to completely concur. Vincent, we did an episode a few episodes back where we were talking about our top episodes, and I just had to throw this in, even though it didn't fit with the theme or anything, just because I love it so much. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, if there's something, especially like a more emotional person, if there's something that can hook them on this show, this is the episode. And it goes into territory that one of the news articles linked in the show notes talks about how brave it is to talk about mental illness. And that's actually one of my favorite things. That, you know, we have Vincent Van Gogh here who suffered from mental illness, and he's treated in such a respectful way. It's just exemplary of how the doctor treats everyone. Like, yes, this is a great standalone episode, but it's also a great introduction to the doctor, the way that he views humanity. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely agree with you that this is, you know, if you're going to see like what this show is all about, even though it's a standalone episode, it doesn't really fit with the rest of the season, and it's very sappy and emotional. There's, you know, things in there that are just, you know, this is what the doctor's all about.
Yeah, it really is. Even though it's, you know, it's one of those ones where if anybody who's trying to figure it out says, well, wait a minute, didn't he just alter the timeline, you know, he's showing these things to him, and he's going to, well, you know what, this is actually, because of just the sheer power of it, it doesn't even throw you. You know, yeah. I think maybe days later after first seeing this, I thought, oh, wait a second. Well, everyone thought he was crazy anyway. So,
yeah,
I guess he could tell people that he traveled into the future and saw his own fame, and they just think, well, that's Vincent.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, so that's our those are our picks. We did get some feedback from our listener, Abby. She said the Shakespearean Code and Vincent and the Doctor, and also the Runaway Bride.
Yeah. She specifically when she was explaining that with the Shakespeare Code and Doctor and the Vincent, they were because of the fact that she was understanding, okay, I'm trying to introduce new viewers, so she wanted to use them for friends of hers who were either, you know, lit majors or art majors or something, so she wants to give them something that they can hold on to and say, okay, well, you know, you're in the, you know, you take drama courses, so I'm going to show you the Shakespeare Code because, you know, you've done Shakespearean productions and this will give you some understanding, or folks that are in the fine arts programs because they'd be able to use that.
Okay, yeah, so I mean, that makes sense. Thanks, Abby, for the... I was a theater major, so I loved Shakespeare Code for that particularly, but I would never have said, like, that, you know, this is... Well, you need to see this episode.
And that's, like we've said, you know, it all comes down to knowing your audience. You know, you can have the bulletproof, perfect pack, but if you know that this person is into Shakespeare, like, beyond all reason, then yes, definitely show them that episode. Or, you know, if they find farting aliens hilarious, you know, show them the Slitheen and then apologize profusely.
Yeah, our joke this week was they should watch every episode except for Love and Monsters and anything Slitheen.
Yeah,
and you'll be fine.
So, maybe I mean, fear her.
Yeah. Fear her and fear him, the later episode. I don't know the real name of that one, but there was a boy.
Yeah, but I mean, it all comes down, if you know your audience, tailor it to them. You know, you can plan ahead all you want, but if you know which episodes are going to work best for a specific person, then definitely cater to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, guys, seriously, this is the best show on earth. Like, anyone can like it. You have to just get that little niggle that'll get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll find your avenues.
Yeah.
So, but forge your own path. Know your audience. Forge your own path. Rely on these. Insert your own, you know, for whatever reasons. You know, if you've got somebody who you think has the aptitude to be able to handle a lot more of the temporal manipulation, then go ahead and throw them something more complicated if you think it's an episode that they're going to really dig. Or, you know, if you're going to be sitting there with them through it, as Jay was suggesting, you know, if this is one of those kind of handhold things and you're on good footing with your new viewer to be able to – to sit there and answer the, who the hell's that guy? You know, and go through those things. Great. Go ahead. Throw them whatever you think they're going to be comfortable with. But
yeah,
thankfully the show is so diverse over the course of its 50 years that you've got a lot of different directions that you can hand people and they will definitely find something.
Yeah.
Even Melissa's boyfriend.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm going to come back in a couple of weeks and be like, guys, I found the perfect episode. Now he's back into it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we do have some news that came out this week. Thankfully, we're starting to get something other than, you know, Matt Smith leaving, although that's still dominating most of it. Yeah. Big Finish got their license renewed through 2013. So... Yeah. We do have more of the Big Finish audio dramas coming our way for at least the next 3 years.
Cool. Yeah.
That was supposed to be 2016, not 13. I apologize.
Math is hard.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, not much in the way of story on that one. It's just, hey, they got renewed. Awesome. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is interesting because, you know, if we get down to, you know, they're still doing a lot of material that touches on the original eight. So it's a constant opportunity to go back and be able to find some new appreciation for some of those earlier timelines. But if the episodes themselves are a little difficult for you, you know, the, like we said, pacing, production, acting, costume, whatever, that just doesn't seem to allow you to be able to get into it, this might be an excellent vehicle for you to be able to kind of take in those things without having to, you know, and they're obviously modern productions, so they're going to be, you know, paced at a listening audience that you may be more comfortable with. So,
yeah. So. Yeah, and let's see. We've also got
Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So they're actually putting a TARDIS in space. There's a Kickstarter, and we'll have a link to in the show notes for this. It's a full size TARDIS, and it's actually built now that they are going to be launching into space. They've rented space on a rocket, I think. Cost like $33,000 or something. They rented space on a rocket, and they are going to put a TARDIS in orbit.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, TARDIS is built. They have, I believe, the company, and they just need to pay them to get it out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
They have hit their total. They're not sure if their numbers are quite accurate, though. I mean, they fit something like, what was it, 35 grand or something like that they figured was going to be required for not only the production of it, but also the you know, renting the deployment or its place in the deployment and so forth. But they're still earning. I mean, they're still taking it in because they do realize that as a result of price fluctuations or inflation or just the whimsy of privately contracted launch pads and things like that, they might have to up the costs associated, but so many people are jumping out so fast on this thing.
Oh, yeah. They've already got 1,600 backers. They're at $40,000 so far. So, I mean, they've passed their goal by what, $3,500 or so. Damn it, math again. Yeah, plenty of money. And as of right now, there's still 18 days to go on this thing. So yeah. By the time you listen to this, there's still probably going to be 2 weeks to go at least. So there's plenty of time to get your money in on this and, you know, just contribute to putting a TARDIS in orbit.
Come on. You're listening to this a month from now, oh my God, there's a TARDIS in space.
look. So yeah. Very cool. The blueprints alone are just kind of the coolest thing. So they're yeah. kind of breaking it down. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the solar panels and the cameras that are going to be looking back, so you'll be able to get orbital shots from where it's out. And from the whole TARDIS. Thing is just freaking cool. But yeah, loving that one.
Just big old squee moment. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, they've also announced a Doctor Who walking tour is going to be part of the Doctor Who experience in Cardiff.
I mean, as if you didn't need more of a reason to go to Cardiff right away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm going to make it to Cardiff, and I want to walk around, and I want to see these places.
Guys, as the only person here, I believe, who's been to Cardiff, it's I hope it lives up to your expectations. That's all I'm saying. There's a smell at night. I don't know what the smell is, but there's a smell at night.
Well, I mean, it says it's going to include the building where the Weeping Angels watch Sally Sparrow at the police station in the Blink episode, the American diner from The Impossible Astronaut, the Wales Millennium Center, where episodes including The Girl Who Waited, The Sound of Drums, and Vincent and the Doctor were all filmed. So, lots of places that you can go to and visit and say, holy crap, this is where the Doctor sat.
Yeah. This is I don't care if Cardiff smells. If I'm inside the entire experience building, you know, I'll just bring up a small sleeping bag. I'll be real quiet over in the corner. I'll pay for a multi-day pass.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, I never go to the doctor's.
Multi-pass. There's a crossover for the episode. Yeah.
It's okay. I went there too.
That's right. I can't.
So, but yeah, we do have news about, casting the new Doctor, obviously. This is just going to persist. It's going to continue forever.
Yeah, every week. Just expect us to.
Yeah. Well, but I think these are kind of interesting ones. Well, at least, one kind of leads into the other. One of the things when we were talking about potentials, hypotheticals, and things, and I always said, if they went the female Doctor route, I think Helen Mirren could just destroy the role. I mean, she has such presence and so much gravitas and everything that she would just be able to just devour it and do fascinating things with it. Apparently I was by no means in a minority in thinking so, and her name was bandied about all up and down, along with a lot of other people over the course of the last week or so, strangely enough. Yeah. But they had a chance to actually go to her about it, and she was very gracious and all. But said that she just kind of felt that it wasn't something that that would suit her personally. Yeah.
She's definitely behind the idea of a female doctor, but she just doesn't want it to be her.
Right. Now, this is actually a pretty direct contrast to that kind of an interesting article that now who came? Jay, did you find this one or Melissa, did you find this?
Yeah, this is one that I came across. And this is a very vocal feminist, and she's got a whole article and everything, who said that she doesn't think that a female doctor is a good idea. Mm. And I mean, I'm not going to go through this whole thing. She wrote an entire article here, but the thing that got me was down at the end, at the very bottom of it. She said, as feminists, we are always asking men to change, to become less aggressive, and to value equality. The idea of feminists arguing that we should take away the only male role model that appears to use his brains rather than weapons or fists seems rather alien to me.
And you can actually append that weapons, fists, or his codpiece.
Yeah.
And her argument kind of summarizes up to that point. It's very interesting, as she talks about, when she had grown up watching the program, back in the Baker years and things, and then watching, newer viewers or things kind of come around to it. It's a very solid argument coming from a very unusual place. But as soon as it clicks with you, you're like, okay, well, this is a representation of a character, at least with Modern Who. And I'm definitely going to hang that there, because if you start heading too far back, you know, the classifications and the chauvinism still in the earliest stages was still readily apparent, you know, until you get up to about third, fourth Doctor when it starts. And that was also just a matter of the nature of the airing time mm-hmm. for the episodes as well, and emerging into our sexual revolution. But the premise of the non-violent approaches to the problem solving, and the idea of the defying the principles of male conquest and domination and so forth. And there's this one character, happens to be male, often travels with female companions. It's not a romantic attachment. In fact, there's many instances where that is outright blocked. And is a representation of some of the ideals that a feminist would want from a male primary character. So why would you want to necessarily take that away? Really valid argument.
Yeah.
No, I read this article. We're going to link to it in the show notes. And I was like, I'm not entirely sure of the point that she's trying to make. And then in the last couple sentences, it made perfect sense of, like, you know, we have this male role model who is a superhero, but not like a violent, killing bad guys necessarily kind of superhero. Like, why would we want to turn it into a woman just for the sake of novelty? She makes a really good point.
Yeah. The one sentence I took away from this thing, she says, you know, he shows boys, specifically boy viewers, that are, you know, because as Melissa wants to say, it is a children's show. No, it's a family show. Children just happen to be in the room. But most of all, he shows boys that violence and aggression won't get them what they want. Being clever, being a nonconformist, being kind, talking things through, those are the ways to be a hero. And that's something where I think that benefits, and not just the boy viewers as well, but it also shows young female viewers that not all boys and men are going to behave like what they might be seeing at the moment. There is the possibility that they're going to have male figures in their life or male interactions in their lives that don't have to be part of that, you know, chest thumping, warmongering, you know, stereotypes. So,
yeah. I mean, it's a great article to read, just, you know, even if you're dead set on the fact that the next Doctor needs to be female, it's great to read just for the alternate viewpoint. You know, it may not sway you. It may, who knows, but just reading her take on this is awesome. So, well, that about wraps it up for this week. Do you guys have anything to say in closing?
I'm glad we did this, because we always chat about this stuff, you know, online, offline, about, you know, how we're going to break people into this stuff. I know I've gone through this process with a number of folks, some successfully, some unsuccessfully. I also watched a lot of people attempt to do this for others very unsuccessfully, because they just said, oh, just start at the beginning, go. And based on their exposure, you know, based on the stuff they've been watching, you know, if they were True Blood fans beforehand or something like that, and they started with Rose and started going on, they made it about five episodes and said, no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, I think there can be a process or a system to it. And I'm glad we got a chance to do this. This was kind of cool.
Yeah, so save this podcast for future years from now when you want to introduce someone to the show.
Yeah.
Write it down on a piece of toilet paper. Stick it on the magnet in the fridge.
Yeah, but I think the key thing to take away from this is definitely know your audience. You know what appeals to them and tailor it to them. So, but yeah, go ahead and, you know, head over to GallifreyPublicRadio.com/42. And leave your starter pack in the comments. Let us know what episodes you start people off with and why. You know, we want to know what it is that other people are using, because there may be one that is the perfect episode that we just completely blanked on. Let us know what it is you use and why you think it's so awesome.
Yeah, if someone can have the perfect defense of Love and Monsters and convince me.
Well, because I'm trying to get an 11-year-old into it, and the only thing he finds funny are plastic aliens and farts. So there, yeah, that's exactly what I use.
The Slovene are for you, kid.
Precisely.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want that kind of kid in our fandom. I'm sorry, no.
And Jason kick him out.
You are not allowed. No. But yeah, just let us know what you like. Let us know what you use, because that's the kind of thing that we're very interested in. So
do let them know also, next week, because you're talking about some opportunities to be able to share some ideas with us. Going into next week, we're going to be talking about some of the technology involved in the Hooniverse. So everything from sonic screwdrivers to vortex manipulators to psychic paper and everything in between. So we're going to be talking tech. So yeah, there are aspects of it. I think is it fair to be able to say we're probably just going to we're going to hold off on talking about the TARDIS because it's just a little too big.
Yeah, that I mean, that's an episode at least in and of its own right. You know, that's yeah. So anything aside from the TARDIS, we'll say.
Right. So yeah, if you've got some insight on those things, or if you have some things you want to share about the growth and expansion of the use of the screwdriver, or if you're one of those people that giggles every time he cracks out the psychic paper booklet or what have you, like I do, then go ahead and share those with us, because it gives us some material that we want to be able to cater these casts to you folks. So
yeah,
and I'm sure, because I'm not the most tech-minded person, there's going to be things that slip my mind that I'm going to forget completely about. So even if you think it's inane, like, send us your tweets or something. Like, I would love to hear just people's opinions on the tech of Doctor Who, so that I could be like, oh yeah, like, you know, that is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're going to spend at least 20 minutes talking about his Ghostbuster backpack from Army of Ghosts, just so that you guys are warned.
Right.
And just some housekeeping news. We will have episode 43 out on our regular schedule. But then we are going to be taking a slight break for about 2 weeks. I'm traveling back to Virginia for my brother's wedding, so we're just going to take some time off. Just a couple weeks. We will be updating the site with all the latest news and stuff, so you can still go to GallifreyPublicRadio.com and get all the breaking news and everything that you want out of there. We just won't have a podcast for a couple weeks. So if you're new to the show and you're trying to figure out why nothing has happened in the last couple days, this is why.
We swear we're coming back.
Use this as an opportunity to go back and catch some of the earlier archived episodes, especially ones prior to Series 7, or that we took during the mid-series break. We had an opportunity then to do some interesting discussions of the villains and a couple of other things that might be kind of interesting to kind of get our takes and see how stupid we were back then, too.
Yes. So, all right. Well, this has been episode 42 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, and verily I say unto you, go and spread the word of the Doctor.
And this is Melissa saying, just watch the show. Trust me. Tell your friends. Trust me. Just watch it.
And this is Kier saying, as always, I'm a madman with a box.
See you guys next week.
Halsey.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@GallifreyPublicRadio.com. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.
Really want to make a dirty box joke.